This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Our host for this panel, CWF longtime fan and of course senior columnist, senior PW Torch, Mr. Bruce Mitchell. Come on up, Bruce. Woo! Sit down here. Okay. Okay, Bruce, you sit over here. Sit down, I'll pass the mic right up here. Yeah, cool, do that. All right.
So, assuming anyone in back is listening to this,
you're my second favorite Bruce that has a podcast.
Oh, man. You may know me Bruce or a jack-off like that. For that.
So let's start with the box office draw.
Michael Yamaha.
Seating arrangement here? Good to see you.
My legendary friend playing Wars of Friends every week.
The Kamikaze Kid was the best player.
Kamikaze. Shut the fuck up, Nick.
The original laughing generation of the
My Nick. What's up, baby?
Is that Cecil?
You gotta tell that
Cecil. Fuck you, Smith.
Alright, I just want to start with a question. Question for everybody, which is, what got you hooked into becoming a wrestling fan, and then how that evolved into becoming a wrestler?
Hey, what was the question?
What got you hooked into becoming a wrestling fan? How'd that evolve into one wrestling?
Oh, I forgot Johnny.
The question was,
what put you into professional wrestling? What got you going? Were you a fan before you became a wrestler? And what brought you into the sport?
I'll go. Fuck it. Sting was my original inspiration. I saw him and I just loved the shit he was doing. Face paint, he had all the energy in the world. And yeah, that's what made me want to become a wrestler. And when I was able to become a wrestler, I did it for the pussy.
Did that work out?
I mean, no, not at all. Not at all. Not here, at least.
Quantity, quality, or?
Quality, quantity, it's all the same.
So my first experience with wrestling that got me hooked was seeing Bill Mascaris. It was the IWA, it was on TV, and, you know, instead of a comic book, watching some flat happening, here's this real person, and he's whipping everybody's ass. Every time they got in the ring, little did I know why that was happening at the time, but it was amazing. That's what got me hooked, and then, you know, an opportunity came on about wrestling, followed that, and it turned into whatever the hell I do now.
Yeah.
For me, I grew up watching Flair and Steamboat and Saturday nights at 11:05 after the news, and I loved it because I was just into what was going on, and they always went off the air before the finish, made you watch the next week and see what happened. As far as getting into wrestling, I knew I always wanted to do it, and I was dating Shane Helms' sister when I met Shane. And he just came up to me one day and he said, "Hey man, you want to wrestle?" And I was like, "Fuck yeah." So he took me to a school, trained me, and things took off from there. And I've loved every minute of it, good and bad. And I wouldn't trade it for nothing in the world.
I grew up in the Midwest and became a wrestling fan a few years before cable really spread around. So all we would see is AWA up there. And I was a fan because my brothers and most of my friends were fans, and we went to some of the shows. But then we started reading the magazines, the Pro Wrestling Illustrated and Inside Wrestling and whatnot. So I'd read about other places, specifically down here. And to me, like the Greensboro Coliseum in particular, sounded like such a magic place. Like it was the pinnacle where anybody would want to go. Greensboro must be the most amazing place in the world. And then when cable came along a couple years later, I'd get to see some of the guys because we had Georgia on TBS, we had Southwest on USA, we had WWF on WOR out of New York. So then I got to see what a lot of the guys really looked like that I'd read about in the magazines. And I knew somebody who agreed to train me. I had a little bit of an amateur wrestling background. I wasn't an Olympian or anything like that. But then I looked at moving at one point, and really what sort of mapped out the future of my life for me is I said, I want to go down to Greensboro, that place that always seemed so amazing to me, reading about the early Starcades and things like that. And it's the best thing I ever did because it brought me to CWF, too.
Awesome.
Just make
sure they didn't cut it off on me.
Hey, Grant, get do your job.
I didn't get into wrestling until real late, like 97, like the height of the Monday Night Wars. And that's what really hooked me was the pageantry, trying to outdo each other from week to week, the NWO, Stone Cold and The Rock and Triple H, and just how it was just bigger than anything I'd ever seen before, and how physical it was, and it was like football but on another level, like without pads, and just, I don't know, it just spoke to me, made me want to do it. That's all I got.
Next question. Shut the fuck up.
And best question for everybody. Talk about a career highlight, a specific night that, for whatever reason, you got the most out of, you had the most fun, you worked with the people you wanted to work with, everything came together. Talk about career highlights.
All right, I got one. The first night, this is the first night that pops into my head, was the night that I won the Mid-Atlantic Championship from Brass Walter Monkey Eaton and Rick Converse, because I hate fucking Rick Converse with a passion. I won it because it was special, because not only was it the Mid-Atlantic Champion, but it was a championship, but it was the first time my mother, who was very, very ill, came to North Carolina to see me wrestle in CWF. She's heard about it. She's a big fan, but she can't travel that much. So luckily, she was able to come to this certain show and see me win the most prestigious belt in my mind at the time. And, like, it was emotional. I crushed Walter with a frog splash. And I started crying like a baby. I don't care if anybody thinks I'm a bitch or not, but I cried like a baby that night. I was a belt mark. The night was great. And that's the main highlight of my career, winning that title in front of my mother. So that's what I got. There you go.
Your house. 1990 World Series, Cincinnati Reds. Cincinnati A's. Unfortunately, it's the last World Championship in Cincinnati, but we're working on that. When it comes to wrestling, I got 10 million of them, really, honestly. We can talk all day about that. Nobody wants to hear it. But I had a remarkable thing with Yamaha that we did, remarkable with Kazi that we did. Corey and Nick, what he did. Just something like Shane Helms, all the stuff that I did with Shane Helms growing up, you know, he was just a little shrimp boat like you ain't never seen, skinny, but he could whoop everybody's ass. Stuff that I did with him. And then, you know, we got to do something with the Hardy Boys right here in this ring, in this building. I mean, that's got to be a highlight no matter what. That was unbelievable that even happened here. I still can't even believe it happened. Unfortunately, it got deleted. But it was awesome. So I mean, you know, and that's just a handful. I could have 10,000. I mean, Russell Dr. Neville. I never thought that would happen when I saw him on TV. So it's all kinds of just crazy stuff, but nobody was here on that.
I do.
Definitely a tough question because there can be many answers to that question. For me, definitely everything I ever accomplish here at CWF will always be a part of me. I will always reflect back to those moments because they were the greatest moments of my career. But, you know, one of the biggest ones for me was I got to do Sunday Night Heat one night, and I got to tag against my best friend, which was Shane Helms, or is Shane Helms as the Hurricane. So that was a pretty big moment for me, being able to do that, and not only just but to do it for WWE was huge for me as well. So.
For me, it was winning the 2007 Weaver Cup with Johnny here towards the end of his life, and we didn't know he'd die shortly after. Obviously, I wish he lived another 10 years, 20 years, forever, but the fact that he passed shortly after, I think, made it even more meaningful to me, although I'm sorry he had to die. I didn't know Johnny terribly well, but I was really proud to have met him and sort of be a teeny tiny part of his legacy, specifically at a CWF event, because I think these shows encapsulate the spirit of that era better than any other wrestling shows I've ever been near or on. So that's probably the one I'd take with me.
Mine would have to probably be 1A and 1B. The night that Corey and I won the tag titles, got to work with the old creator here. That was certainly a highlight. The night that I won the television title at Battlecade.
You had an assist on that one, didn't you?
I had several assists. But just to know that the effort I've been putting in for a company that I love to work for so much finally came to fruition was a highlight for me.
Piggybacking off what Michael said, wrestling is connected internationally through all kinds of different ways. So I imagine all of you have someone famous or someone well-known that you met. You need to tell a story about how great that was or how great it was. Talk about somebody in professional wrestling that you saw that you had some connections with.
Well, for me, I guess one that comes to mind would be Triple H. When I actually did Sunday Night Heat, I actually grew up loving Shawn Michaels, and he was actually a total dick to me that night. He didn't like me at all because I was small. I guess he didn't remember that he was small when he started too. So, you know, he was against me. He didn't like me. He didn't like my look. Triple H actually pulled me to the side and spoke highly of me, said that I reminded him actually of Xbox. He liked the way I bumped, and even though I was small, he liked the way I looked out in the ring. So, I mean, I guess that would be what comes to mind on that question.
We can talk about baseball if you like. I got a lot of good ones and those are better conditions. But the one I got is me, Great Buddha. It's awesome. He was coming down the hall. He's walking like this. I was like, damn, his knees are so fucked up. And I was like, and now today I walk just like him. But the funny part about it is that we get autographs, and I knew that I wanted mine personalized. But, you know, how do you tell somebody that, especially my name? So I knew to write my name on a piece of paper when he got into autograph, and he did his autograph to write my name, you know, copy the piece of paper. And so Brass Monkey Walter Eaton also wanted to get his personalized, and I told him what to do, and he walked over there with his to do it too, and he goes, in Japan, I don't sign autographs like this. I'm what you say, prima donna? Yes, last time.
I have two quick stories. These are bad experiences. Because when I first started, I was kind of an asshole. And
started.
Shut the fuck up, Nick.
Started.
All right. So I was wrestling in SCWA, an old promotion in Wentworth, and they had a bunch of people come in, and I was the first one to the building, except for a group of guys in suits. So I went up and I introduced myself to all these guys, and there was a guy in the middle, surrounded by all the suits, and he reaches out and I shake his hand. I'm like, "Hi, I'm Kazi," and he goes, "I don't have to introduce myself." I looked at him, I went, "Who the fuck do you think you are?" And then it dawned on me that this was Ole Anderson. And he looked at me like he wanted to murder me, but then he kind of smiled and he did this fake little punch that when you look at it, doesn't look like much, but it was like that. So it was a real hit, but it was like, "Haha, kid." And then it dawned on me that I was an asshole. Second time, I was in Florida, and I was wrestling for a company that I had no idea who was there. I had no idea what I was doing. So I started, shut the fuck up. I was walking up the stairs, and there was this old man in front of me, and legit, he just stops in the middle of the stairs and starts looking around like he's never been in this fucking place before. So, of course, I'm like, "Hurry the fuck up, old man." And he turns around, and I realize it's Larry Zbysko. And he tells me, and he kind of tells me, he's like, "Shut the fuck up, kid." And I'm like, "I am so sorry. My bad." But yeah, I just have bad experiences with meeting people like that. So,
and that's kind of how Larry wrestled, too. So.
I also cussed out Boris Zukov. Whatever.
When I was still living in Milwaukee, one of the better promoters there was a fellow named Carmine Despirito. He's still running, I think, lucha shows in the Southwest now. But he would connect me with some higher-profile promoters just because he sort of liked me personally. And he would take me up sometimes the first Wednesday of every month. Eddie Sharkey would run a show in the First Avenue nightclub in the Twin Cities. This is the club where they shot most of Purple Rain. And I was never there a night when it happened. But on occasion, apparently, Prince would just show up with his guitar and say, "Hey, can I plug in and play a set there?" Now, that's not my story, though, but that would be awesome. But the first time I did one of these shows, and again, it's a Wednesday night, which I don't know the schedule now, but at the time, those were one of the travel days for WWF guys. So I walk into the building, and the first thing I see is this enormous guy in a black T-shirt, and I think, "Geez, that bouncer is humongous. He looks just like Brock Lesnar." And then I see another guy that looks just like Shelton Benjamin, and I realize, oh, that's not the bouncer, that's Brock Lesnar. And it was very cool getting to, you know, he messed around in the ring working out with us all before the show. And obviously nobody wanted to actually roll with him on the mat. This guy was an NCAA champion. I might have been the second best wrestler there, and I was a competent but unspectacular high school wrestler. So, but it was really awesome just sort of to be in the ring with somebody that powerful and that overwhelming physically, that even for a fairly muscular guy like myself, you really have the sense that, oh, if this guy wants to snap my head off like a toothpick, he could do that.
I've been fortunate enough to actually be in the ring with quite a number of guys. But as far as in-ring stuff goes, I'd say that my best experiences were when I got to work about probably three or four matches with Bobby Eaton, but my best experience with a legend was in New York for WrestleCon a few years ago, I got to work Bobby Heenan's table. And I mentioned this story when he passed a little while ago. And he was selling, you know, his pictures and whatever through with High Spots, but then he had his own book. And I was really digging that book, and he was signing it and everything. I said, I want to get this book. I want, because I know he's getting all of this money, and I know he needs it. And so a lull in the line, and I turned to his wife, because I know she's handling the money for it, and I hand her $10, and he's just kind of looking around, just looking at all the people, and she slides the book over to him, and he looks down at the book, looks over at her, and she shows him the money, and she shows him the money and points up at me. He looks up at me, looks back at her, and goes, you know, waves back, telling her, give me back the money, signs the book, and just hands it to me. And that was just, I was like, this man, in this time when he could use it the most, and he did the selfless thing for me and nobody, you know, I just, that spoke volumes to me. So that was one of my best experiences that I've had since I've been doing all this.
I'd like to ask a follow-up question on the subject of interactions with named wrestlers. I'd like to know Mitch Connor's best Buck Zumwalt story.
I'm not going to tell any of the worst Buck Zumwalt stories, although I certainly wasn't anywhere near the worst Buck Zumwalt stories ever. You can take it. I'll say this, because obviously anybody who knows the real life backstory there knows that what it is awful, and he's guilty, and he's paying the price for it as he should. But he always treated me well, so I'm happy. But I wish some of us would have had more courage at the time to say, hey, maybe something's going on here, because it was widely suspected but not proven. And I think a lot of us lacked the courage to maybe speak up and say something about it. And I regret that.
I'll take it the other way. Working as many shows as you guys have, having long careers, you've got to have some fan encounters of whatever stripe that would be good story. So I'll ask you guys that.
No, I got to think about this one.
One thing that touched me very much was, and I think most everybody here knows, at one point I suffered a stroke. It almost killed me. It was a full-blown hemorrhagic stroke. It landed me in the hospital for a good while. Most of the guys here remember for a while, I was talking on one foot of my face like this and dragging my foot everywhere I went. And there were a number of fans from here in CWF that tracked me down, somehow figured out real name, what hospital I was at, and High Point, came to visit me, and it really touched me a lot. Because my only connection with them was here. And to know that somebody that I only knew from here, from a performing standpoint, felt that personally invested, that they would care about my health and my well-being like that. It's part of the reason I love all our fans everywhere, but I love the CWF fans best because of that.
Y'all know, I know you got some fans.
I missed the question. What was the question again?
Just encounters with fans, maybe crazy fans, maybe amorous fans, maybe fans
who
hate you,
maybe. Fans you fucking?
Amorous? Come on. English around here.
No, I mean.
They're talking about weak.
Fans are great, I mean. I've had fans from here years ago when this company first started that I think it was made a garage out of pictures of Amber and myself.
It's really more like a shrine.
It is.
It was kind of awesome, though. I mean, I was just like, wow, this is pretty amazing. So, I mean, just for fans to just think that people like myself, I mean, they look up to us like they do to somebody like The Rock. I mean, that's... We're nowhere near that status, but that's amazing to me. Hell, I've had fans, no lie, see me back when VHS was the shit, tapes of them playing with, good females playing with their shit, you know, like, you know, I've had shit come in the mail back, so it's, You know, it's pretty amazing what fans can do.
So. It's amazing what fans can do.
What's that?
I told my sister not to.
Well, I do have an actual funny Bugs Zumwalt story. Okay, coming back to Brad's last question, I do have a funny and relatively clean Bugs Zumwalt story. He would run these shows out in the middle of nowhere, the Dakotas and Wyoming and whatnot, and they were, I mean, teeny tiny little hillbilly towns, but we'd all get paid really well because he'd run into skeleton crew with about six or seven wrestlers, and we'd do like five of these things in a weekend. So I was actually making more money for Buck than I was wrestling on much, much better shows at the time. But I'd usually wrestle Buck in the opening match, and a lot of times there'd be some shenanigans, and that would set up a tag team main event to save money on talent. But once I was wrestling Buck in the opening match, and he hooked me for old-timey wrestling fans will remember that a lot of the old-timey wrestlers would often do a move where they'd hook their opponent as over a pile driver and then just sort of jump up and ring their ears like so. And Buck hooked me for it, and somebody in the front row yelled, "Get on the pile driver, Buck!" And Buck stopped, froze where he was, turned to them and said, "No, no, no, it was only the first match. We ain't doing no fucking pile driver."
I can't really think of anything too off the wall. The only thing that really comes to mind is when I was wrestling Bobby Eaton one time, this kid who was wearing a cape and a mask. I was managing Bobby Eaton. This kid wearing a cape and a mask jumps the barricade. And he was close enough to me that I turned and went to just, you know, knock his block off. And I didn't know. Security swooped in and whatever and got rid of him. But I was instinct kicked in. I was like, "You come over that barricade, I'm getting ready to drop you." But, you know, that's I'm sure there's been plenty of other crazy things, but my memory isn't what it used to be.
Yeah. Good story about himself to your child, though.
I didn't.
So this story isn't about me and a fan, but I have this fan I know. It's my mother. So my mother was at a show in Charlottesville, Virginia, and Lee Valiant and my trainer Sean Christian were a tag team, and they had a manager that was Lee's crazy ass girlfriend at the time, and their gimmick was they demeaned her. They treated her like shit. They used her as a stepping stool to get in the ring. You know, basically how Lee treats women now. I'm just kidding. I love Lee. So my mom, who's a hardcore Christian, who is very nice, loves everybody, saw this and mentally lost her fucking mind, snapped, broke the little barricade that was in front of her, went on the apron, started cussing, smacking the ring apron, threatening Lee's life. She was saying, "I'm going to fucking kill you. I don't care." And this is a hardcore Christian. So, like, after the show, I'm like, "Mom, are you okay? Are you good?" She's like, "Yeah, that was a great show." I was like, "Yeah, but you got up in the middle of it." Like, just, and I saw Satan come out of her face, and she was like, "Fuck that motherfucker." And I was like, years later, I'd understand why. So, yeah. That's fun. Huh? Yeah? I love you, Lee.
So, you know, most of the things I think of lately is just being in Chapel Hill. All those fans in Chapel Hill are insane, throwing stuff at everybody. Right? Yeah, they love somebody from Chapel Hill down there. They don't like us. But, no, the best one I got is one time, and this was in Zebulon, North Carolina, of all places, at the Army. And Chuck Coates was wrestling as the Russian assassin, and that was about the time that the Russians was, you know, on television and stuff. And he did his normal thing. And these two guys, after everything was over, came through the doors into the locker room. And I'm sitting in there, ready to go, waiting on Chuck. Chuck has got his stuff. He's coming up right beside me. And those two guys go, "Where is that fucking Russian at?" And me and Chuck both just pointed to the shower. He's like, "He's in the shower." And then they took off, and then we took off. Because they were going to kill somebody.
What going to be me?
Yeah. All right. Next question.
Does anyone but Bruce have a fucking question? Well, Bruce is the moderator.
I know that. Bruce is for everybody else.
Yeah, I have a question.
I love not Bruce. But
not Nick.
Oh, shut
up. Not Nick. Smith asked you.
Sounds like you.
This question for Coach. Ever since I've been here, the All-Stars have been a pretty prominent force in Sedalia. Who out of the current locker room may be on your radar for someone that you would want to join the All-Stars?
I got to put on the spot with that same question back when the other Rumble, right? Was it the Rumble? The ring broke?
Absolute Justice.
The ring broke.
Who broke that ring?
This one.
Donnie!
So we just had to make up some stuff to fill up time, which was awesome, and I loved it, actually. And I was asked that question, and I answered that question, Eric Rule. And today, Eric Rule was on the All-Stars. I think that's awesome. He was the one drafted.
Yeah!
Most everybody's been an All-Star already. It's hardly anybody left not to pick.
Eric Andrews.
I would say right now, Kane would probably be my number one draft pick right now.
Why?
Yes, it is! Oh, fuck you!
Now you see why I was sharing mine.
I'm about to take it, see?
Talk about the one very best match,
the match across, the best match.
ECW
tribute match, right?
Yes!
Jeff turned away like, who got
hey, you can do Jeff's version of that. You can call our version last night.
Actually, yeah. Somebody asked me last night during my Grant Q&A about the ECW tribute match, so I would now like to get. I'm told that you were livid and throwing shit in the back. Yeah, I wasn't in the back, obviously.
I blacked out, so I really can't tell you where I was.
Your reaction to watching the ECW tribute.
Somebody match? Said I was hanging out a little elevator hole, blowing a whistle and throwing flags,
no,
and screaming.
That was during when.
Oh, that was your.
Ray,
that's
the
right.
Roy was down there.
Okay, so I was probably in the back with my pistol spinning the revolver, and I just didn't get him. I didn't get him. I lost. It was horrible. It was the worst thing ever. I thought I was in the company, and I was going to go get my gun and shoot Brad after it was over.
Pretty much
that was it.
And look at us now.
We survived.
Tell me about all the other times you talk about shooting Brad.
Man, that's every Tuesday. Come on.
Best match.
I already described that. I got too many.
One of my best matches was in 2011, I think. I had a Kazi Rules match with Nick that had no build whatsoever. There was no storyline to it. It was just, hey, you two fucking want to wrestle and do this crazy shit? I don't know. Who was that? I don't know. But that match included a barbed wire kendo stick, light tubes that I got busted over my back that hurt like hell. It was awesome. Me powerbombing Nick in the thumbtacks, me hitting him in the back of the chair as I called him a motherfucker, which is before Trevor Lee did it every other week. So,
but Lee was doing it every 2 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's what Lee does.
He kept the Yamaha tradition going.
Absolutely. That's my favorite match. It lasted about 30 minutes. It was hardcore. It was brutal. That much blood hadn't been spilt in CWF for a long time, I don't think. Ever, maybe. So,
ever.
Yeah, who cares? So, yeah, that's it. There you go.
I need to sort of ask this by saying some of my best matches were before I came down here, and a lot of them were with the same opponent, my best friend, who I broke in with, the Beer City Bruiser. We probably wrestled each other 100 times and felt comfortable enough to really hit each other as hard as we possibly could and whatnot. And so those were really rough, good, visceral matches. So every one of those I love. Since I've been down here, honestly, if I made a top 10 list, probably three of the people at this table would be on that list. I never wrestled you one-on-one, Yam, but I had an excellent semifinal match in the Weaver Cup with the coach, believe it or not, shortly before he flopped over to the rule breaker side of the ledger and I bumped over to the fan favorite side. I had an excellent Weaver Cup match with Kamikaze Kid here, actually during a time when I was not having many very good matches, when I had gotten a bit disinterested and lazy, but I thought I gave a very good performance in that match, and he was an excellent opponent for me. And then Donnie and I, we've wrestled a number of times, but we had one particularly really heated match when I was on the outs with Brad and Fatback, and there was a lot of real intense animosity there, And it was a very impolite, very rough, very hard-hitting match. And so I'm proud of all those matches. There have been a couple other really good ones down here. I had good matches with Sylvia, with Converse. I had a really good one with Corey Edsel here that I was very proud of. Actually, not here, but at the old building.
Did you beat Converse?
I did beat Converse, actually, in May of 2005, yes. Right. In the cream, in the middle of the ring.
I can't watch that match.
With no help at all from the Mad Trucker and Little Billy. No matter what you may hear.
That was your first win, wasn't it?
Down here? Was it really? That might have been.
Is that hard?
Fuck.
My favorite match would probably have to be Dog Collar against Nick, just because of the drama and the build that we put into it. I feel like we made it mean so much. But the match I had probably the most fun in was the three-way that we did at Battlecade with Maddie for his send-off. And then there was another one that I had on my mind and it slipped my mind just now. It might come to me.
I imagine your tag title win, Corey.
Well, that one was nostalgic and great and I don't know, the fun it's definitely in my memory, but as far as like most enjoyable, because they put us through the ringer. Ortega and Coach put us through the ringer on that one.
Well, I want to add for me, by the way, even though I lost the match at Kandrak in what was at the time my retirement match, I was proud of my effort there, and I'm really, really grateful to be on the kind of good terms with Ray that I am right now.
Obviously,
Coach,
but anybody else?
Yeah,
okay.
Me, other people besides you have questions.
Yes! Yes! Thank you!
Boy, I learned this philosophy at the end of a fan fest when I gave the microphone up during the interview, and
it never came back.
We needed to get wild first.
My question is for my management coach. I'm very curious to hear more and learn more about how CWF got involved with the fake AWA.
Fuck Gail Gunn.
I think I signed a non-disclosure agreement when it comes to that. I got a great story. This is awesome. I wish Danny was here. Danny, unfortunately, has to have a work real job and pay the bills around here, so he's not able to be on this legend panel, but he should be.
Absolutely.
It all came into we were told we were wanted to be in the NWA, and when it came time for that to happen, Ricky Nelson did everything he could to make sure that didn't happen. He hated us and said all kinds of shit and always runs his mouth about us. And but anybody knows him, so you know what I'm saying. And so, you know, we saw this stuff with the AWA going on too. And so we reached out to Dale Gagne, not knowing he was a big con artist, and talked to him about doing that. You know, I looked at it as a marketing standpoint. I knew that if we could get the rights to sell the merchandise, that it would be more than worth being involved in it. And it was. Made plenty of money selling merchandise involved the AWA logo, although it was probably illegal, but we didn't know that. You know, he just was, I mean, he was just so shady about everything. He ended up trying to, Rick Converse and Xyrus were the tag team champions. And so back, you had to put a bond on the belt. That's back old school stuff. So we had a bond, they had a bond on their belt. So they wanted their money back. They're like, fuck this, I don't want to be champion anymore. I need money more than I need a stupid belt. So they're supposed to lose the belts at Jimbo's show out there, or whatever, but they won instead. And so we told Rick, you know what, we'll solve this problem. So we told him that we're going to do a title change, and me and Jesse were going to win the belts. And he's like, no, you can't do that. So we proceeded to just go out there and win the belts. And then take pictures of it with a big FU, get the belt, and posted it on there in Jesse's Hummer. So it was awesome. World Tag Team Champion, cannot be denied. It was real well. Yep. And then Jesse ended up stomping and breaking one of them in half. And
of course
my understanding, they were sold on the black market to a guy in Virginia that's a big belt marketer.
Absolutely.
But, the best part about that was Danny assisted WWE attorney, whatever his name is, McDevitt. Yeah, helped him to make sure that they got that lawsuit that banned him from using that name anymore in Minnesota, because that's how they were able to get him back for all the shady shit he was doing to people.
Good.
We came out on top. That's the best thing about it. We came out on top in the whole situation, but there was a whole lot of people got screwed over, so we just paid everybody back for them.
I got a little to add on that, actually.
Oh.
I actually, before I moved down here, had limited interaction with Dale, with John Stewart, up in the Midwest, and they had a rep back then for running these shows where they would have Kane on the poster, not Kane Justice, but WWF Kane, and they'd be running their show on a Sunday evening against the WWF pay-per-view when Kane was obviously going to do the WWF pay-per-view, and they'd be running some county fair, and they'd have a 6'2" Kane in the ring or something like that. So the shadiness was there way before all this. Secondly, I think they also stiffed Rick on a payday or two.
Absolutely. And sued him.
That's right.
Turned him into a credit collection. He was getting credit calls saying he owed money on a credit card or whatever.
Unbelievable.
Good. Fuck Rick.
We eventually proved fraud on that. That was one more way we stuck it to him, you know, on a payback.
And a few months later, after all this had sort of gone down and we were no longer associated with him, I'm flipping through the cable channels, and Johnny Stewart is on one of the news shows, one of the cable talk news shows, talking about politics. I think he runs for office and whatnot. And I don't remember what they were talking about, but I called up to be one of the callers, and I gave the operator some sort of phony political question, and I didn't wind up getting on the show. I was one of the people that got cut off. But my question, once I got on live, was going to be, hey, you and Dale owe Rick money. When is he going to get his
$200?
And I regret not getting through on
that. I wish you would. That would have been awesome.
Now, I got a question. Now, Kyle, you mentioned your mother previously. I want to wrestle you guys. Like, my parents, I'm not obviously not a wrestler, I'm just a fan, but they absolutely hated wrestling. How did your family or girlfriends or boyfriends or whatever, did they back you when you decided to become a wrestler, or was it a hard sell?
Well, my mom hated it. My mom obviously hated it because she didn't want me to get hurt. She was always worried because, I mean, she watched me do this crazy backyard stuff before I started training and realized that backyard's stupid. She watched it. She hated it, and she thought it was crazy for me to do it, but she supported me. She's, like, my biggest fan. As for girlfriends and shit like that, like, I always told them, I was like, if you ever try to step between me and wrestling, it's over. I don't care who you are. I don't care how much I love you. The only people that would actually get in the way of my wrestling now would be my kids. They take priority over everything. Well, even my wife now knows. She's like, I'm never going to ask you to quit. I mean, I'll quit and come back and quit and come back for the rest of my life. But nobody, I don't give a fuck what anybody else thinks. You know, if they don't support me, they don't support me. I do my own thing. So, there you go.
My mom, like I think probably a lot of moms, never wanted me to do anything that would hurt me. So she was always wary of it. My dad wasn't really against it, but he's not really a fan. I think he never really understood the appeal of it, and that's fine, but he's been supportive enough. My wife also is not by any stretch a pro wrestling fan, but she's supportive and thankfully has come to know and love enough of the people here that she's become more into it than she was. That said, she will never in a million years watch a talk panel about pro wrestling, even if you put a gun to her head. But just in case somebody shows this to her, I love you, baby. I love you, honey. Thank you so much for your support.
My parents have never been really one way or the other. They, you know, support you, whatever you do, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, my mom's always just worried about me getting hurt and this and that. And they've never really attended too many shows. They've been to a couple here or there, but they are kind of just hands off. My brother says that I used to make fun of him for watching wrestling when we were much, much younger, and I don't remember that, but and that's what he criticizes me for now. But you know, he's got his own stuff, and he supports me in his own way. But you know, family's just kind of like, yeah, do your thing. You know, they don't really, they're not. It's neither here nor there for them.
My mother, being a smart lady, did not want me involved in this, but she did not prevent me from doing it because she thought I was too smart, waste all my talents on wrestling. My dad did not, you know, stop me from doing anything. You know, he supported anything I do, but, you know, I really didn't pay that much attention. He first time he actually saw me was a few years ago, back in the last building that we had. He came, that was the first time he'd ever seen me, and that was, you know, long past my wrestling. I was player coach, but barely wrestling. And he brought some friends of his from work that liked wrestling, and he was like, his comment was, "Wow, I didn't think it was going to be that good." So, no other problems with it.
For me, my parents loved it. I mean, they knew that's what I grew up wanting to be. Actually, I mean, I wanted to be a wrestler, so they were cool with it. My mom, she was awesome with it too. She went to a match, and I actually got hurt that night, and she never went back again. So she was done with it as far as that. My dad always supported it, still does. My mom does too. She just ain't gonna go and hang that shit up. But I don't know. I've been married and divorced twice. My second marriage ended because of it. Well, actually, I met Amber O'Neill at the time, and I didn't give a fuck about my wife. I wanted to get to know Amber. But yeah, the second wife, she was kind of done with the whole traveling and wrestling things. So anyway, but for the most part, everybody in my life has supported it, and I've always been grateful for that.
Got a question?
No questions from the peanut gallery.
I fucking hate you so much. I really fucking hate you.
So I feel like all of you will have one. Everyone to the left of Yamaha, I want your best Yamaha story. And Yamaha, I want your best coach story.
There's no one to the left of Yamaha.
Yes,
there is. You go all the way around the room.
Shut up.
Specify.
All right, I got a quick one. This baseball bat. I'm going to give the quick version of this because I don't want to take everybody's time. But we were all hanging out at Nightdale one night, and Yamaha is downstairs, and Amber comes in, and she
was upstairs.
Was he upstairs?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Guys, he set it up first. The racetrack show.
Yeah.
I don't want to go. Michael. Yamaha might have been fucking somebody else. He might, I don't know if that's confirmed or not. I mean, I know there's video proof of it, but I'm not sure.
It's all the tape, it's confirmed.
Okay, all right. He might have been fucking. Well, Mike was upstairs, and Amber O'Neill, came out, and she just started going crazy downstairs, and we're all like, what the fuck is going on? Like, you know, I don't have the best memory, but I remember this crazy bitch saying the worst things that you could ever imagine about somebody, she was saying. And some of it didn't even make sense. Like, she came in, she was like, Yamaha, you better grab your raincoat. And, like, we're like, what the fuck do you mean? And she's like, you ain't got a breath in hell surviving the night, Yamaha. You can lead a horse to water, but you ain't getting out this house. And everybody,
that's a good promo.
We're all just like,
this is all true.
We're all just like, what the fuck is going on? Next thing I know, she's banging this up against the wall, being like, huh? I'm going to fuck you up. That's the last thing I remember about a Michael Yamaha story, besides him living in a tent in the ring. There you go.
I literally don't have any first-hand good Yamaha stories. I've heard about second-hand, but I've mostly kept my nose clean since I've been down here in the Carolinas, which means I've been
mostly... There was that one time you ran around Applebee's.
Oh, yeah, but that didn't involve Yamaha, so we don't have to tell it here. So.
I can confirm that over there.
I mean, yeah. How many fights did you ever start because of Yamaha?
No, that's not the best story I want to tell. Fatback Rising, me and Nick versus Yamaha and X, and we're talking about, all right, Mike, we're going to work your right leg instead of the left. So Mike throws the right leg for a super kick. I catch it, drop an elbow on it. I take it to the rope, and I go to jump on it, you know, as you've seen 100 times before. And we discussed this, Mike, don't turn your foot. Because when you turn your foot and I come down, I'm going to hyperextend your knee. Well, what does Mike do but turn his foot? And I come back down and hyperextend his knee. And Mike is hobbled the whole time, really hurt, really pissed. really, really pissed. Comes in hot tag. He's tagging me and Nick, and Nick's bumping and feeding, just doing like a good little guy should. And Mitch comes in at the end. I mean, Mike is furious in this match at his own doing.
And, of course, it's not your fucking fault, man.
It's
fucking good.
It's not. Go back and look at the video. And Mitch grabs the mic and, you know, says his you know, piece, because he's beefing with Fatback, and makes the mistake of giving the live mic to Michael Yamaha, to which, and this video, the show was just recently uploaded and unedited, mind you, because I just watched it the other day. And you got a 30-day suspension for that, I believe. A couple years later, he came up to me, no mention of it, in between this, comes up to me and says, "You know what, Nani, you're right, I'm sorry."
And a note, by the way, an invited guest that evening, if I remember correctly, was Solomon Spades had invited the preacher from his church to come.
I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Okay, I got one. I got another one. All right. So I'll tell another quick one. So me and Yamaha were discussing next hour's match, okay?
I'm so grateful I came to this.
We discussed X-Hours, what the finish should be for X-Hours' match. And I convinced Mike that my deal is fucking gold. And so Mike was like, "Yeah, that's fucking great, yeah." So when X walks in the building, me and Mike go to him and we're like, "We got a finish for your match." So I pitch it. Mike adds his comments, and he's like, "Hey, you should do this." X goes, "Fuck that, that's stupid." Right? So, of course, I'm like, "All right, your match." And I leave. Mike stays on and starts arguing with it. He's like, "No, X, you're fucking stupid." And they start arguing back and forth. And at this point, X had missed, like, a couple shows before this one. So Yamaha gets here, and they're getting fucking really angry in the ring.
He was going to miss another show, too.
Yeah, he was going to miss another show, too. And then, Yamaha's getting all heated, shit, and he's getting furious. And we do as the blood vessels pop up in his head. It's fucking fantastic. And we're all just sitting there watching, like, "Yes, fight. Fucking fuck each other up." And all of a sudden, X just says, "What the fuck do you expect me to do? Miss my family's Christmas? I'm not missing Christmas." And Marky Omaha, with the best promo voice I've ever heard, he goes, "Fuck your family's Christmas." And that's it. That's it. That's all I remember.
They start tussling, and then, like, I'm just frozen on the ground. Like, I didn't know if it was real or not.
Oh, it was real.
So Danny comes in and breaks it up, and then pulls it apart, and then Kazi just runs it and everything
after that.
Like, 5 minutes later,
Kazi's
like, "Hey, Eric, put your family
through." I actually made a Christmas card that said that.
That shit, leave alive. That shit was, it was like this, because I'm holding X in the ring, and X goes, "Get off me, bro. Get the fuck off me. If you're in my way, then you're part of the problem." I swear to God, it was one of the funniest fucking things I've ever seen in my life. Kazi's a shit fucking stir.
I would never start shit with anybody ever. I don't instigate anything.
I think we've surpassed our time.
Let me ask you one more question. I want to direct to you guys.
I do have appointments. I got to be somewhere by 2 o'clock.
You guys are part of the foundation of this company, lasted 17 years. Coach, where do you see the future of CWF? Wrestling is changing, the platforms are changing. It always is evolving. What do you see this company growing, or how do you see the future for you?
I never thought we'd be where we are now, although my goal has always been that and beyond. So I think my goal stays the same. I want CWF to continue to grow, to continue to be the kind of product that we are, what we represent, which is a Southern style. It's what we grew up on. It makes sense. I mean, to me, it's simple. It's easy. It's easy to follow. We got tons of great guys. I want it to continue to grow to the point that we actually, you know, my dream is that people wouldn't have to have a job anywhere. Their job would be here and getting paid enough money here that this would be their full-time job. So they could just go to the gym, work out, eat, come back and do shows and do birthday parties. But that's what I would like. That's always been my goal, and it continues to be my goal. And every other little goal that we've reached, So that's the ultimate goal.
Awesome. I want to thank everybody for being on the Legend panel and what's that show tonight? And particularly $90. Yes. Oh, okay. Well,
for the record, I fucking hate it, and he can actually eat.
Yes.
That's fucking legit.
Is anyone else?
That's legit.
All right, we'll be right back.
I don't know. All
right, all right.
Oh,
there
he is. Everybody.
You
guys paid for hours. Panel without the campus legend.
Perfect timing.
All right, you guys paid for an hour, so here's what you get. Line up to the left. All cash is accepted.
Brad, what's up?
You learn something every day. Thought
you were
dead.
Wow. Apparently.
Yeah, we are.
Oh,
you guys keep going. Whatever.
Keep going.
Don't let me interrupt
you.
Gary, come on, Gary.
Just
gotta make sure these are regulations.
What the fuck's happening right now?
We're getting
a sword again. We need a world's
greatest announcer. I'm right here. I guess we're done. Are we fucking done? Is that what's happening right now? Can I go? Somebody already told the Cool J story as well, so that's fucking great.
What Cool J story you got?
Okay.
No, it's already been told twice.
Okay.
Also,
Michael
died. Okay, it's that. Okay, so we're going to have a cornhole tournament. Or a cornhole night. Okay.
Fuck this.
Keep me beat. That's terrible. Cornhole match sounds real bad.
No.
Red, you can do what you want. You can't do what you want.
Wait a minute.
What's his name?
Jari?
No. I think we want to talk about. What are we doing? What's on the agenda? It's more talking, right? More it's sandwich time or something, right?
Sure.
Okay, cool.
All right, let's do this.
Do what?
Fans, come on. Coach, I need a partner. Bruce Mitchell.
Yes.
You play first.
It's still recording if you need it to.
There was gold in the mountains till a man from the northeast arrived, waving $100 bills. He said, "I'll pay for the minerals."
Just party going.